these reasonable solutions are not only good to protect the dignity of everyone in society, they're required by law.
This is Family Policy Matters with NC Family President John Rustin.
Thanks for joining us this week for Family Policy Matters. Today we're going to discuss a victory for religious liberty that recently took place right here in North Carolina. You may recall several years ago, before the U.S. Supreme Court issued its landmark Obergefell v. Hodges decision that legalized same-sex marriage across the nation, that the North Carolina General Assembly passed a bill allowing magistrates to recuse themselves from participating in the solemnization of marriages in North Carolina based upon a sincerely held religious objection. Well, in February, a magistrate from Union County, Gail Myrick, reached a settlement with the state of North Carolina in a discrimination lawsuit she had filed after being forced to resign her job and subsequently losing her retirement benefits when she adjusted her work schedule so she would not have to participate in marriages in Union County. Our guest today is Stephanie Barclay. Stephanie is counsel at the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty, which is a nonprofit public interest legal and educational institute with a mission to protect the free expression of all faiths. Stephanie, welcome to Family Policy Matters. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Great. Well, Stephanie, as we begin our conversation today, if you would give us some background on this case, what events transpired that caused Mrs. Myrick to resign her job as a magistrate in Union County and then file this subsequent legal challenge against the state?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Gail Myrick was a highly qualified and well-respected magistrate in North Carolina for many years. As a magistrate, she issued warrants, set bail, and a very small portion of her work included performing civil marriage ceremonies. When same-sex marriage became legal, Gail didn't want to stop anyone from getting married, but she knew her religious beliefs prevented her from personally performing same-sex wedding ceremonies. Since handling weddings was such a small part of her job, she hoped there was a way to keep her job without violating her conviction. Gail's immediate supervisor had a great solution. They could simply shift Gail's schedule by a couple hours so she wasn't even working when marriage ceremonies were performed. Gail's office would let magistrates shift their schedule for lots of reasons, and that solution would have allowed everyone to get married without delay or embarrassment, and Gail to keep her job. But the state government rejected this solution and forced Gail to choose her faith or her job. She was forced to resign, losing her retirement and the job she loved.
Stephanie, one of the most interesting things about this particular case is that Ms. Myrick had made arrangements, as you said, with her boss and her coworkers to avoid any sort of conflict. But then the state government stepped in and said this was an unacceptable solution and essentially forced her to choose between her job and her deeply held religious convictions. In your opinion, why was the state so intent on pushing this agenda when a reasonable accommodation had already been made?
Yeah, it's a great question, and that's exactly what the federal judge wanted to know when we took this case to court. And under our civil rights laws, employers really are required to try and find reasonable solutions for religious beliefs, like in this context. That's why recently the federal judge ruled that the state government broke the law when it refused to let Gail change her schedule and it refused to even consider reasonable solutions. The government later acknowledged it treated Gail unfairly, and it entered a substantial settlement to make her whole, giving back the back pay and the retirement benefits that were unjustly taken from her. So this case is important not just for Gail, but it also sends a strong signal to state governments that if they're going to be unreasonable and unwilling to try and find reasonable solutions and protect employees of faith, then there are consequences that they'll face, and that these reasonable solutions are not only good to protect dignity of everyone in society, they're required by law.
Gosh, I think that is such an important statement, because we've seen this in a lot of these instances, as it is with Ms. Myrick, that she just wanted to appreciate and recognize and honor her deeply held religious beliefs, but wanted to do so in a way that was non-confrontational, a reasonable accommodation to suit the circumstances. But to some, that was, and in this case, to the state, that was not acceptable or appropriate. And therefore, the courts had to get involved, and the state ended up losing in that situation.
It was a good example where the state didn't have to lose. There didn't have to be a winner and a loser. They could have found a way, where, if the state had just been reasonable, where it could have still provided its services to any couple without embarrassment or delay, and Ms. Myrick could still have her faith. And then it could be a win-win solution for both sides. Those sorts of solutions are available if we're willing to look for them. And this is a good case that reminds us not only should we look for them, but our civilized laws require us in many instances to do just that.
Well, that's very positive. Now, Stephanie, based on your legal expertise, what's the difference between the future significance of this settlement compared to a possible decision by a court? I mean, it certainly creates some sort of precedent, but would you consider it to be kind of legally binding precedent, or it just sort of sets the stage if similar challenges are brought in the future?
Well, there was a decision by the federal judge before settlement. So we do still have federal precedent and EEOC precedent as well, letting state governments and employers everywhere know that if you're not willing to provide any sort of reasonable accommodations when they're available, even for magistrates and state employees, then that's a violation of our civil rights laws. So there is still a precedent that is important in that way. The settlement, I think, is doubly significant because it signals even more strongly to employers and state governments that there are significant financial risks if they're going to be unreasonable and if they're not willing to try and find ways to protect dignity of all sorts of different individuals in our diverse workforce. And that, I think that will be a positive thing that makes a lot of employers sit up and take notice.
You're listening to Family Policy Matters, a resource from NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more resources that will help you be a voice of persuasion in your community, go to our website at ncfamily.org.
Well, this situation is really interesting because so often the religious liberty cases we hear about are brought by same-sex couples claiming that they have been discriminated against. But in this case, Ms. Myrick, a Christian, was discriminated against by the government. So how does this particular case fit into the overall landscape of religious liberty cases that we're seeing across the country?
Yeah, it's a great question, and you're right. The federal judge did explicitly find that Ms. Myrick had been discriminated against because the state was willing to provide scheduling accommodations for all kinds of other reasons and would have provided it to Gail if she had asked for just about any reason and singled her out for poor treatment simply because of her religious beliefs, and that is discrimination. What I would say about that is that really a lot of the religious liberty cases that are percolating in the context of some of these LGBT issues are often dealing with a question of, are we going to give religious people the same protection we already provide to other groups or not? I mean, in the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, for example, in Colorado, the commission there protected the rights of other bakers, including gay bakers, to turn down job requests for cakes that were condemning homosexuality.
Right.
And we regularly let businesses turn down orders for other sorts of things. You know, there was the Seattle coffee shop that declined to serve some pro-life protesters. Chipotle refused to cater to the Boy Scouts because of their then policy on gay scoutmasters. So businesses make these sorts of decisions all the time as far as what messages they're going to support. And I think one of the important questions in Masterpiece is, are we going to give that same protection to people of faith, or are they going to be singled out for disfavored treatment? What Gail's case shows us that I think is important for lots of these other cases is that there's ways to find the ability to protect the dignity of everyone and the rights of everyone in our diverse society. Faith and sexual orientation are deeply important to the identity of many people, but they don't have to be at odds with each other. In Gail's case, there was a reasonable solution that protected the dignity of both, and the federal judge there said that LGBT individuals couldn't get married without delay or embarrassment, and employers can't target employees because of their faith. I think in many of these cases, there are ways to find reasonable solutions if one side isn't trying to go for a winner-take-all approach where the government has power to pick one right view and then punish those who disagree.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Stephanie, what is the current legal status in North Carolina for magistrates who find themselves with sincerely held religious objections to performing certain marriages in our current cultural climate?
North Carolina passed a law that makes it so that if a magistrate has an objection to performing any sort of marriage based on their religious belief, they can opt out of providing any marriages, and counties have to make sure that someone is available to provide marriage services so that any couple who's entitled to be married under the law will be able to receive those services promptly and on the same basis as everyone else. So that to me sounds like a reasonable solution in a way to make sure that all magistrates with conscientious objections are protected in North Carolina and all couples are still able to receive services they're entitled to and there doesn't have to be a conflict.
Now, Stephanie, just kind of a technical question. This case, the resignation of Mrs. Myrick as a Union County magistrate took place before the Supreme Court's decision in Obergefell, and also actually before the enactment of Senate Bill 2, the magistrate's bill in North Carolina. So did the existence of Senate Bill 2 and the magistrate's protection have significant implications in this particular case, or was it based on the simple fact that Ms. Myrick had religious protections in the Constitution and that the government should not attempt to impose its will upon her in a way that would force her to violate those religious beliefs?
Yeah, it's a good question, and you're right on the timing. So the law that North Carolina passed was not directly relevant to Gail's case. I'll put it this way. She could have still won her case without the passage of that law, just because her law was argued under Title VII protections or civil rights laws, which say that employers have to accommodate employees of certain different protected classes and find reasonable ways to let them still participate in the workforce. And this protects lots of different types of groups, by the way. This makes it possible for Muslims to take prayer breaks during the day, or working moms to have a scheduling shift for family needs, or people with disabilities to receive special equipment so that they can do a good job. And generally in society, we think of that as a good thing. We don't just say to someone with disabilities, if you can't do your job just like everybody else, then get a different job. That's unthinkable. We wouldn't say that to them. And what Title VII says in this case is we can't say that to someone for their religious beliefs either. And that, I know it's tempting for people to think that, but the court made very clear that the state was wrong to say, if you can't do this 2% or 5% or whatever it is of your job tasks, then you can't work here, which is essentially what the state did say. And because of the facts in Gail's case showed that there was an easy workaround, an easy, reasonable way to allow the government to accomplish its goals while still protecting Gail, the state violated the civil rights laws by not considering that.
Well, and I'd say that and ask that question because, I mean, obviously we're very supportive. The North Carolina Family Policy Council worked hard in support of Senate Bill 2, the Magistrate and Registers of Deeds Protection Bill. But I think it is significant in this particular case that this result came about kind of notwithstanding Senate Bill 2. And so that speaks to the fact that courts, that judges, and that many of us still hold to the fact that there are fundamental religious liberty rights that are protected by the Constitution that are intended to continue to exist in our country despite the many challenges that we see around the country, and that people who believe that their religious liberties have been infringed upon should seek to protect those rights and know that our Constitution is designed to provide that protection.
I agree that there are certainly constitutional rights for religious liberty. This case wasn't even decided under the Constitution.
Right.
It was
right.
Decided under civil rights laws, but both offer important protections for people of faith. And I think this case is an important reminder that they're not the only group in society that doesn't get those protections. We offer them to lots of groups, and we should, but we shouldn't single out people of faith to be the eccentric uncle of the human rights family. Religious liberty matters, and it continues to matter in our country, and that's a good thing for everyone.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Well, Stephanie, where can our listeners go to learn more about this case and the great work of the Beckett Fund?
They can go to www.beckettlaw.org, and this particular case, Gail Myrick's case, is one that they can find on our website and learn more about her story and this good, great victory. It's really a momentous victory for religious liberty.
So with that, Stephanie Barclay, I want to thank you so much for being with us on Family Policy Matters and for your dedication to ensuring the protection of religious liberty rights for people of all faith across our country.
You've been listening to Family Policy Matters, a production of NC Family. To listen to our radio show online and for more valuable resources and information about issues important to families in North Carolina, go to our website at ncfamily.org and follow us on Twitter and Facebook.